Welcome to this podcast.
Water Polo Expert Talk. Get the insights. Hello and welcome to the next episode of our Water Polo Expert Talk podcast. So this time I welcome Sean King from the UK, and Sean attended the Olympic Games in 2012 in London, and he talked with us about his experience of the UK national team and his current job as a teacher in London. Okay. So, welcome to the podcast, Sean. So, I'm very happy to have you here in the podcast as a next international guest in the podcast. Maybe as usual, also with the other guests. So, I would hand it over to you for a short introduction of yourself, maybe at the beginning.
Sure, absolutely. Obviously, if I start by saying thank you, Andreas, for having me. Obviously, as the screen says, my name's Sean King. I was extremely fortunate to have been part of the Great Britain men's team that competed in London 2012, as well as played professionally both in Germany and Spain. And now, whilst I'm not currently involved at the moment, I was coach of the Great Britain under-19 men's team that went to Minsk in 2018.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe you mentioned that you play as an active water polo player really in different countries. So yeah. Maybe we can start with these kind of experience from yourself. So when you compare these countries in terms of water polo against each other, so what do you say, what are the most or the biggest difference maybe between these countries in terms of water polo, in terms of...
Yeah, so I moved to Germany with SV Weiden in 2010. I'll go back a step. So part of what was happening in Great Britain is we'd won the 2012 bid, and with that had come a significant amount of funding. Unfortunately, we lost that funding in the lead up to 2012, which I don't think people are that aware of, because obviously we competed. So there was a lot of uncertainty about whether we would go sort of around the 2010 period. So our performance director at the time essentially said, go and play abroad. So all of the men's team were basically tasked with finding clubs. So I trialled at Rapid Bucharest. I trialled at Zentej in Hungary. And actually, it's quite strange how I ended up in Germany. my best friend was signed by Weiden. And essentially, the coach, Eric Luksak, who's still involved with the club, wondered if there was another British player that maybe wanted to go. And so I was signed blind. So he hadn't seen me play. I hope had received good recommendations from my coach, but he signed me essentially as a friend. So I was, it was quite strange how it came about. I loved it. The 2 years I spent in Germany. I often talk about it a bit like an apprenticeship, you know, where it was sort of learning the ropes of, there was so many sort of being a foreign player and the pressure that comes with that, you know, whether it's a direct pressure of, or the expectation is maybe the better way of saying it, that I felt this real weight of, you have to perform, you know, you have to perform because look, ultimately you're being paid and a lot of those guys are working or studying and coming to the pool. It was very physical. You know, I found the league, a lot of the teams like to play press. You know, German guys are generally big, you know, and physical. And I found that that really benefited me, you know, because I was a slight guy. I'm not now, but I was quite slight. I was quite skinny. obviously it was just great, you know, the whole experience. Like, I remember our first game was against Spandau.
When you had the first game against Spandau, there are maybe not so good memories on this game.
Yeah, but like, I won't say the scoreline, but I mean, playing against like Chigir was in goal still at that time for Spandau, and it was just, we walked out, it's Schoenberg, isn't it, their pool, the pool they play in, and walking out and the posters of the players. And it was just like, Politzer was still playing, I think, as well. And it was just amazing, you know. And I loved what we'd obviously not been used to was the traveling to games, being down in Weiden, obviously in deepest, darkest Bavaria. We were traveling 6-7 hours to Erdingen. And I mean, Berlin, I think, was 6 hours. Würzburg was the closest game, but that was 2 hours. I'll come back to what we started with. When I compare it, so Spain, I played in Spain after my 2 years in Germany in Navarra. Now, obviously, look, in Spain, water polo is played in Barcelona. You know, it's played everywhere, but the bulk of clubs are in Barcelona. So I was out in Pamplona, right out in the north, and a slightly different sort of setup. Very different style of play to the German style, you know. It was very tactical. A large part of that was down to Andrei Josep, the Romanian player who is now a very good friend of mine. He was there at the time, and actually played a big part in me moving there. I mean, as I say, it was much more tactical. It was much more, there was a lot more sort of where we would press a lot in Germany. There'd be a lot of emphasis on playing press for as long as possible. We would play a lot of combinations in defense, or specifically target certain players, which we did in Germany, but it was a lot more of that in the Spanish league.
Yeah. So when you say the German league or German players usually are very physical and not very small, and you will play most of the times, especially maybe in Weiden where the pool is not so big, where you have a small pool, when you play press for sure. What kind of tactic what level have the British league or the league in the UK at the moment? So I'm not really sure about that everybody is aware of the league in the UK. Is there a level when you compare to other countries?
No, I mean, look, the honest answer is no. You know, it's a lot of the guys that were obviously involved in that Olympic cycle. What's really good is that most are still playing. I think it's really difficult when you're funded and then you lose that funding. You know, it really changes the mindset of when you've been paid to do something. It's pretty difficult, you know, and also when it comes to loving the game, you know, it's when you're doing it as a job, you know, I love it. But I could easily see somebody going, you know what, like I don't have the same love for it as I once did. But when you think of level, it's tough, you know, where I mentioned already my role with the junior national team and us qualifying for the Europeans. The last qualification before that on the men's side was my age group as a junior, which was 2008. So you're looking at what 10 generations, if you like, that didn't play at the European level. And so, you know, most guys between my age group and the age group I coached, they probably won 5 caps for the national team, Andreas, you know, and that's a pretty short international career. So it's not professional. You know, most clubs probably don't train more than twice a week, if some probably less. What we do have is so many clubs. You know, often when I speak to sort of Eastern European counterparts, they always talk about Montenegro and 4 clubs, you know. In Britain, we have 5 divisions, you know. So we have
which is quite a lot divisions, but maybe, as you mentioned before, it's not really on the highest least at the highest on a high level, competing against Germany, Spain, Hungary, whatever.
It's tough. There's a lot of good individuals in the league, you know, and predominantly to be really honest, it's the guys that were involved, you know, around that Olympic cycle. Some of the younger guys that were on the fringes, but the bulk of the guys that played in London 2012.
Yeah. So when you say the guys you are playing with at the Olympic Games in London, and you mentioned that, in front of these, let's say special tournaments in these countries, the host countries, they are very, high engagement of funding these and be successful at the games when it's happening and so on before the games and after the games, these engagement is really going to zero. Maybe also the case for you in the UK.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, absolutely. I think that our sort of governing, so UK sport, if you like, which is the Olympic level funding, that level of funding, they're changing their stance a little bit. So I probably softening a little bit from it was literally medals, you know. So they're, particularly for London, with it being a home Olympics, it was medals. That was the whole funding process was on medals. Look, now it's, I think the wording they're using is medals and more. So develop development.
More.
Yeah, great. So
be qualified, please.
Yeah. So we've got some funding recently. I don't know if it's sort of that widely known, Andreas, but we've received some funding from UK Sport. I think it's around 375,000 sterling, so pounds. Now look, it doesn't sound like a huge figure, but it's going to make a massive difference, you know, to a program that's all volunteers, you know, it's largely volunteers. So that's a really positive step. But look, we're almost 10 years from the London Olympics, and it's the real first sort of injection of money that's come into the sport. So there's no doubt that it's had an impact on what followed London 2012. Absolutely.
And when you mentioned the qualification of the under 19 national team, you were the trainer of, maybe you can give us some more insights about this kind of success for you and the team. What is your feelings or your memories on these tournaments and going to these qualification tournament?
Yeah, so it's. I think, look, for us, as I've already mentioned, we hadn't qualified since I was a junior. And now my hair, you can't tell at the moment, but my hair is going grey. So I guess in a way, Andreas, I'd been critical of the national team. I'd been somebody that had been quite critical of the fact that we weren't qualifying, because I think the biggest thing in all of it, we have talented players, Andreas, you know, like really we do less than everybody else. You know, but we're no less talented. You know, we have really talented water polo players in this country. And so I took on my job. I'm a teacher, but is what I do for a living. The school were really, really good in allowing me to get involved with the national team. And I think I got involved sort of 18 months out from the European qualifiers. And look, I benefited a lot from my own experiences with the funding and having been in an Olympic program, if you like. But I just took a really hard line of the biggest thing for us, Andreas, is swimming. You know, a lot of our water polo players, they may come from a swimming background, but they play water polo because they don't like swimming. is the honest. I mean, look, I am that, you know, I swam and I did other sports, but I played polo because I found it more fun. So one of the biggest things for me was making us fitter. You know, we had so many teams that could be in a game for half a game and then lose it in the third period, you know, and that was my big thing, was that we have to be in a game. We have to stay in the game. You know, we have to be in those decisive moments towards the end of the game. So there was a massive expectation on the boys to swim. And I think maybe one of the, I'll even say like controversial, you know, which for us it sounds controversial. I'd imagine in every other federation, I know in every other federation, it's normal. You know, we even sent kids home if they didn't meet the standard, you know, in swimming alone. And really that wasn't something that had happened. And I think I even shocked, I remember talking to my captain, having sent boys home, and him being like, I never believed you'd send kids home. Like, I thought it was an empty threat that make sure you train because we might send you home. And look, I was really lucky. I had some talented boys. They worked really hard. You know, we looked at it like you do the bulk of your swimming away from the program. And we really focus on that polo side of it. You know, defense for us, it was all about defense, you know, being very structured when we didn't have the ball. You know, if we can limit the opportunities that the opposition create, we're going to give ourselves the best chance of being in the game. And look, I'm talking about beating Ukraine. You know, I'm not talking about beating Germany or Holland or, you know, I'm talking about winning that key game, you know. Yeah, there was some, we did look, and looking back, we made some mistakes. Like, there were things that I certainly learned from myself, yeah. But we certainly brought some real positives in, you know, certainly making it more professional. I think we took a really professional attitude to, which the boys deserve, you know, like they deserve that, you know. It, at the end of the day, I always say this, like, it's the national team. And so it should be that, you know, it should be that. And, but honestly, when I think about experience, it was just incredible, you know, that you always, no matter how confident I felt, there was always an element of doubt that you wouldn't do it, you wouldn't qualify, you know, and we'd be like everybody else that we tried and we failed. So to actually achieve that qualification was just amazing.
When you say you're working as a teacher, more or less, your normal working day. Is it really a school which is also offering a water polo as a sports? Or
yeah, so this is where it's quite a nice story. So
because we have these kind of situation also not so often in Germany. Yeah, where we can really combine these, most important parts: the school and the sport.
Yeah, so look, this is, as I say, this is the nice bit. So this was my school, Andreas. So and the lovely bit is I was introduced to water polo here.
Okay, so you're coming back to the roots.
Yeah. So as an 11-year-old boy, this is where I found water polo. I'm very fortunate. So I work at a school in South London. It's an independent school. So it's a private school. It's a fee-paying school. Water polo has a really strong tradition here. Interestingly, like, school water polo before COVID was going strength to strength. So more and more schools were playing, which was really encouraging. I really worry about coming out of COVID and how many of those that were just starting are going to return. But yeah, no, look, our water polo program is really strong in our terms. So before COVID, we won the national title three age groups. Interestingly, with the sort of German connection, one of my boys is in White Sharks Hanover this year. So Vuk Sanovic is looking after one of my boys for this academic year. So we've got lots of boys that are involved in the national team over here, or the National Academy, it's called. It is a little bit, whilst a lot of schools play, it has a really good standing here where I work because of the success the school's had over the past 50 years. So I'm going quite a way back, so even longer than that. So I'm really lucky. I'm really lucky that I'm in a school where water polo is held in a high regard.
So you can, in this case, combine the two perspectives. So you can go back to your own roots, where you go in touch with the water polo and teaching other kids right now, maybe also with the same expectation then to be successful. But we mentioned the Olympic Games several times before. When you, as an water polo player going to the Olympic Games as a UK water polo player in London. So are there any special feelings? So Olympic Games are anyway special. But when you are as a UK player walking in the stadium, Wembley Stadium, as a UK water polo player, so what kind of feelings can you tell us?
I mean, like, I'd even go further than that. Look, I grew up in London. I don't know how good you are with English accents, Andreas, but mine is a London accent. So I grew up in London. So to go to a home Olympic Games, you know, is, it's hard to even really put words into it. You know, it goes so quick. So when you're in the moment, it's gone in a flash, you know, and then the bit that comes after is when it starts to sink in and you get a greater sort of understanding of what you've achieved.
Yeah, so what was happening during the last 14 days?
I mean, it just, like, for on a personal, very personal perspective, it meant all my family, you know, like my family, for them, it's a train or a tram or a bus to watch me playing in Olympic Games, you know. So in that, it was incredible. And the whole city, London, the whole country in that period, there was a lot of criticism about the spend, how much it was going to cost. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously off the back of it, the revenue from tourism, I mean, it was 4 or 5 times what the Olympic Games cost. But it was just amazing, you know. And from a playing perspective, look, we had, and I'm sure we'll talk about the group that we had, we had gold, silver and bronze from Beijing, which it's
a challenge,
which was pretty tough. And then look, we had Romania, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that, you know, the Romania game, which was probably the one game that we had a chance. But yeah, I mean, it was incredible. You know, we were at home, you know, nothing was, often with water polo, I've got memories of traveling to Georgia and we arrive at night, we train at 7 in the morning, we play at 4 and we're on a flight at 9 that evening, you know, like you're really uncomfortable. Yeah. It's never easy to adjust to those conditions. We were at home where everybody spoke English, you know, we could watch English TV, you know, everything was, and there's a lot to be said for that, you know, being at home, it was, and to be part of it, you know, a home Olympics, putting water polo to one side, it's one of those where on British television, even now, Andreas, they still show highlights of Super Saturday when Mo Farah won gold, and, you know, so it's something that will live on, you know, in this country. There's a museum where there's lots of sort of, I guess, memorabilia from the games. And it's quite interesting, actually. I was talking to a student earlier, and I'm not ashamed to admit I stole a water polo ball from the because the water polo, you remember the water polo balls had the Olympic rings and they had London 2012 on them. Mm-hmm. And so I took one as my memento. I slap wrist, bad, very bad of me. And I was showing one.
So every second soccer player or football player, for example, do the same. So
No, you made me feel better. You've made me feel better. But it's this kid was asking about it. You know, he was saying, like, have you got anything left? And I said, well, yeah, I have. And it's moments like that when you realize what an incredible experience it was. You know, it was amazing. Yeah. And if I could do it again, I'd do it again. You know, my body couldn't cope, you know, but I'd do my best to have another go at it if I got that opportunity.
Yeah. So I think I talked to some other colleagues around the world during the last couple of episodes in the podcast, where we have the situation that they attend the Olympic Games as an athlete, and after that as a coach as well. So maybe you have then in this case maybe the chance to join the Olympic Games then as a coach.
The dream.
Are there any special memories or special moments where you say, okay, these one or two moments I really remember so good from the Olympic Games?
Yeah, so there's one that's really vivid, you know, is still, there's loads. When I say there's one, there's loads, but there's one in particular that
the top one.
Yeah, so obviously I think it was 5,000 in the water polo arena, which which sadly, obviously, it's not there anymore. You know, it was a temporary structure. I understand that the pool is in Switzerland, that it was rebuilt in Switzerland, but I'm not sure where, you know. So
okay.
When we walked out, there were like double doors, which separated the training pool from the main pool. So obviously before the game, you'd warm up in the perfectly good water polo pitch that was hidden. And then next to the change rooms, and then you'd go through these double doors. Now, as you're waiting for the last game to clear out, you stand obviously by those double doors, but they remain closed. So the referees are stood in front of you, and my best friend, who I've mentioned already, because we played in Germany together in that first season, if you like, he got me signed by a German club, if you like. So I remember saying to him, like, go well, mate, enjoy it. And at that moment, the doors opened. And even now, it makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. We walked out, Andreas, and the sound was, I was just fighting back tears. And to add to that, I knew I was going to be swimming for the ball. I knew it was me that could be. And look, it's not a big deal, but I could have been the first British player to touch a water polo ball since 1950, the last time we played in the Olympics games. Yeah. And it's, look, but you know what it's like when you play sport. You have these little things that you want to, and for me, it was, I want to be that first person. So that was on top of my, that was on me as well, that I knew I was going to be swimming for the ball. And honestly, I could have cried. I stood on that podium, you know, with Romania on one side. You step up and my legs were shaking. You know, I was thinking to myself, in my mind, I was thinking every camera under the sun is going to be on us, and I'm quivering like I'm going to be sick. And, you know, actually, the minute that we entered the pool, it just evaporated. You know, it completely disappeared. But that moment was just, I had no experience of that before. You know, like, we love water polo, both of us, but it's not often you go out in front of 5,000 people, you know, and the noise was just, and they were shouting for us, you know, like having that home crowd, they were cheering. You know, I probably knew 3,000 of the 5,000 people in there, you know, because water polo is a small population in the world, you know, so that was the one moment. That was the real standout moment for me, was that.
Yeah, so playing against the host team, I learned in the past few podcasts, it's really a challenge, but sometimes it's a good challenge. It's better to play against the host team in these kind of tournaments instead of playing against anybody else. Yeah, so we are at the end again of the podcast episode. Thank you, Sean, for all the great stories and memories based on your experiences with the Olympic Games in London. So we are publishing the next part, part two of the discussion with Sean, next week, also again on Saturday. So in the meantime, you are more than welcome to give us some feedback. Send me your feedback as a comment on the social media channels, on the Facebook page, also on Instagram. And if you are listening to the podcast on the Apple Podcast platform, I'm really looking forward for your recommendation of the podcast. So stay tuned. We will publish the next episode next week, Saturday, and I hope you will join us again on Saturday.